When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, it is time. It is 7 o'clock on a Tuesday, and you know what that means during the NFL season. It means it's time to talk to our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Ross, Merry Christmas. How you doing, my friend?
Yeah, Merry Christmas. I'm doing well. How about you guys?
We're doing great. So when we last spoke, you were very skeptical about Bill Belichick coaching at the collegiate level. It has since now happened. He's been hired by North Carolina. Anything that you've seen, like either in the press conferences or the reaction in North Carolina or around football, that have you softening a little bit on your stance that Belichick could be successful at the collegiate level?
Well, no. I mean, I think he has absolutely a chance to be successful. I wouldn't be surprised if he is. Yeah. I think I'm just more surprised that he's doing it. Mm. You know, I don't know anyone. So here's the deal. Yeah. And I don't know how much we talked about this last week. I can't remember. I talk a million places. Yep. But feels like, you know, two of the most important and arguably the two most important things for a college coach are, number one, being able to recruit young people. Right, in particular, high school kids, teenagers, to come to your school, and their parents, by the way, and then to be able to convince donors that they should allocate their funds to your program to help with NIL, to help with facilities, all of these things. And, you know, I did the Patriots game over the weekend against the Cardinals, so I've talked to a lot of people. And I've seen Brady's comments. I've seen Edelman's comments. I don't know anyone that can picture Belichick doing either one of those things.
Yeah.
So I just think it's really interesting. And I think we would all love to see a video of it, of him recruiting a high school kid and what that's like, of him talking to a donor and trying to get more money for the program. It's just... it's just hard to imagine either one of those things. That said, I do think, you know, his reputation and success certainly would help with some of the parents. You know, I even wonder, like, probably some of the college kids, like the transfer portal kids, but the high school kids, I don't know how much they even remember of when Belichick was winning Super Bowls. You know, that was when they were younger. Schematically, he's fantastic. Game plan standpoint, he's fantastic. But I'd also say, I think as soon as he gets a head coaching job in the NFL, or if he gets offered one, I think he would leave the next day.
Oh,
I give him a lot of credit for doing it, because I thought he only wanted to coach to break Shula's record. So I give him a lot of credit for that. But I still think that that's the primary impetus, is to break the record. And so he likes coaching, and he didn't know if he was going to get a job or not. But I don't know. Like, if someone offers him a job after the season in January, I would not be shocked if he took it. Like, I would not be shocked if he's like, well, sorry, North Carolina, but mm-hmm. I'm doing this. I just wouldn't.
Yeah, the buyout goes down to $1 million in June or July of 2025, I think, which is obvious. Like, nobody's going to hire a head coach in June or July of 2025, but that's where it's, yeah, it's kind of set up that way. Ross, I'm gonna ask you a difficult question, and it's okay if you don't have an answer for this, but I still want you to at least filibuster around it. What's the realistic ceiling for this Texans offense right now over the next 4 weeks? Like, what could we reasonably hope for, like some sign of menace or threat or something to where the things click for them?
It's a really good question. I was kind of surprised by that on Sunday. You know, I mean, to not be able to run it like that. Okay, I can live with you don't run it well, because the team is selling out to stop the run. In that case, though, you would just have expected the passing game to really be firing, right? To really be firing on all cylinders. So you can't really get Joe going in the run game. Okay, that usually means that happened to the Eagles, by the way. That happened to the Eagles on Sunday. They couldn't get Saquon Barkley going, really, like they had been, to the extent, because the Steelers, you know, kind of sold out to stop Saquon. They did a pretty good job of it. But then the Eagles absolutely tore him up in the passing game. You know, both Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown had over 100 yards receiving. That's the troubling thing to me, is that the Texans should have somewhat of a pick-your-poison offense, where it's like, okay, you're going to take away this, then we'll be able to do that. Because they've shown that they can do both. They've shown they can throw it. They've shown they can run it. I'll give the Dolphins a lot of credit. You know, the defense came to play. But I don't know. I think it's a really fair question. I think the ceiling is really high because we've seen it. You know, we know it's there with Slowick and Nico Collins and Stroud. We know it's there somewhere. I'm not exactly sure why they haven't shown it or been firing on all cylinders for a while. The good news is, you know, with them clinching the division, there's actually still a decent amount of time to find it. Yeah. Right? I mean, there's three regular season games before they even get to that home playoff game. That's like, it's like football weeks are like dog years. I mean, like, there's a lot of time that they have to try to figure this out and try out some different things next few weeks to try to get it back on track.
Ross Tucker's our Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider calls, of course, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. So, Ross, as far as this matchup goes for the Texans on Saturday, Patrick Mahomes has a high ankle sprain. They're saying he's week to week. We've seen Patrick Mahomes play with ankle sprains before. How do you think the Chiefs, given where they are in the standings right now, and given that they've got to play a Christmas Day game 4 days later, how do you think they handle the Mahomes thing, and how does that affect your handicap on this game? Is it as simple as if Mahomes plays, the Chiefs win, and if he doesn't, then the Texans win? Give us your thoughts on that.
Well, obviously, nobody really knows what the deal is with Mahomes' ankle. It does feel like over the years, I feel like we see this every year where he hurts his ankle and then he plays the next game.
Yes.
You know, the guy's like Gumby. I don't know how he does it. So I do think on some level that I wouldn't be surprised if he's out there. The flip side, though, I don't know. Andy Reid had a lot of success throughout his career with backup quarterbacks. I mean, you go back to Philly with like Coy Detmer, A.J. Feely, Kevin Cobb, Jeff Garcia. I mean, he's won a lot of games, like playoff games, with backup quarterbacks. Wentz has been there for a while. I reference that because they really only need to, like, as long as they just win one of these next two, they still are in a great position to get the bye. So I guess part of me wonders if they would go with Wentz Saturday and Wentz on Christmas with the belief that Wentz can get one of those two wins for them, that they'll win one of those two games. And then after the Christmas game, then you have a full like 11 days or 10, whatever it is, before the last regular season game. And, you know, you can bring Mahomes back for that if you want. You probably will because you're going to probably need the win at that point. And then you earn the bye. I don't know how they're going to play it. You know, the schedule makes it especially interesting with the Saturday-Wednesday. Maybe they just try to heal them up for the Steelers and give Wentz the ball against the Texans and hope Wentz can play well enough to beat the Texans. I think that'd probably be a very competitive game. So it's going to be fascinating. It really, I mean, they won't figure any of that out, I don't think, until Thursday or Friday as they get closer. You know, he won't do anything other than try to heal, and then they'll see where he's at Friday. But there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of possibilities out there.
Well, then we should point out that last game, you know, if they were to start Wentz and they, you know, they don't win either, though, that last game's at Denver, you know, so it's no gimme in that last game if you're trying to, you know, that's a game of guts poker there if you're counting on beating the Broncos in Denver as a way to secure that number one overall seed, too.
So it's a really good point. I think, you know, it's tough to know how bad his ankle is.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably go with Wentz on Saturday and Wednesday.
Yeah.
Give Mahomes a full, you know, what would that be, 3 weeks then? A full 2 weeks. No, 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Be a full
three weeks.
Yeah, be a full 3 weeks. Math is hard. It'd be a full 3 weeks before the Broncos game.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you want the number one seed, you want the bye, but you really want him to be healthy.
Yes.
I don't know that it's worth having him gimp around these next two games. They've kind of proven that they can win a Super Bowl without having the bye or the number one seed.
Yeah,
Ross, I was happy to see that Greg Cassell had at least broached the topic of C.J. Stroud because you asked him a question about it in your Ross Tucker Football podcast. I've been frustrated this year because it feels like I'm looking outside the city of Houston for opinions on C.J. Stroud, and nobody's really talking about him around. I've sent out messages to a lot of the film nerds like Robert Mays and everything. I'm like, can you please do a deep dive into Bobby Slowick and C.J. Stroud? And this is my sense. I feel like the fact that Mahomes is so mediocre in so many ways this year, and because really, other than like Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, I don't know who the good quarterbacks in the NFL are right now. Is there just a, kind of like an uncertainty and an unsettled feeling about quarterback play in the NFL right now?
Well, so Josh Allen is just outrageous, and he's clearly the MVP in my mind. And Lamar Jackson is playing an MVP caliber level as well. What's interesting is like, you know, Sam Darnold has played at a really high level this year.
Yeah.
The last few weeks, Matthew Stafford and
Baker Mayfield
have been lighting it up. Jared Goff has been fantastic every game all year, except for the game in Houston. So there are quarterbacks that are playing at a high level. You know, I thought,
but they're not the usual suspects necessarily. And I think
no, you're right. Some of them are not. And for people that didn't see it, it's on social media at Ross Tucker Pod, but Greg basically just talked about CJ Stroud having to get better, you know, when he's not in clean pockets. And I get that, and I appreciate what Greg's saying. I guess the only thing I would say is, like, it's not like the pockets were all clean last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm not exactly sure what's happened there. Here's what I would say, okay? I think this is fascinating. Last year, I thought C.J. Stroud was like a top five quarterback in the league. And I thought Bryce Young was bottom five, probably the worst. Okay? If you look at them, now Bryce Young did not have a good game against the Cowboys Sunday. But if you look at Bryce Young the month before that and compare it to Stroud that month, I don't know, man. I mean, you know, my whole thing when I go on in Charlotte is like, yeah, you guys clearly picked the wrong guy. There's absolutely no chance Bryce Young would ever, like, I don't think Bryce Young will ever get to as well as CJ Stroud's playing this year. This was last year, let alone, you know, as Stroud continues to improve. Well, pretty clearly, I think Stroud's not playing as well as he did last year, and Bryce Young's playing much better. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if Bryce Young's the 22nd best quarterback right now and Stroud's the 16th. I guess I would just say, if you just took the last month as the example, it's actually a lot closer than I thought it would be. I'm very, very surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think, you know, to that point, Ross, I don't. I mean, it's a very fair point that the gap narrowed, at least for, you know, temporarily for the last month. You always, when we talk about stuff like this, eventually you're like, what do you guys think of it? What's the, you know, what's the feeling on the ground there in Houston? I'm just going to volunteer it for you on this. I don't think Texan fans overall, generally speaking, are blaming C.J. Stroud for any sort of regression for him this year. I think the blame, by and large, is going to Bobby Slowick in the offensive line. I don't think people are nervous that Stroud's not the guy for the next 10 years. You know what I mean?
No, I think he is the guy for the next 10 years. But I also think if they're not seeing that he's not playing as well, that's on them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what happens is franchise quarterbacks are like a religion. And once people once someone has a rookie year like Stroud, it creates so much hope and belief and positivity in the fan base that there's typically like a large segment of a fan base. They don't want to hear anyone say anything negative about that guy ever again. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
they get their defense mechanisms up, and it's like, don't attack CJ Stroud. He's awesome. We saw that last year. Anything that's happening this year is not his fault. You can't blame him for anything. That's wrong. That is wrong. You can say he's a really good player, had an awesome rookie year. He's clearly the Texans franchise quarterback. Well, while also saying he's not playing as well and he's missing some throws that he didn't miss last year. It's okay to still be very high on him as a player, but acknowledge he's not that there are some flaws in his game. If you want to blame it primarily on the offensive line, that's fine, but it's not 100% on the offensive line. If you want to blame it on Diggs getting hurt or Nico Collins is out, okay, but now Nico Collins has been back, and the offense still isn't clicking as much. You want to blame it on Slowick, well then, you know, you got to give Slowick a ton of the credit for what happened last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't have it both ways.
No, that's totally fair. Ross Tucker is our Odyssey NFL insider. Ross, where are you going to be this weekend?
Oh, man. Back-to-back weeks, I got double headers. So, busy time. So, Thursday night, radio, Westwood 1, Chargers, Broncos.
Ooh.
Then I will take the red eye to Indianapolis for another AFC South battle. Titans and the Colts.
Okay.
Two teams that are pretty much out of it. I guess the Colts still have a mathematical chance.
Yep.
And then next week, I got the Steelers-Chiefs radio on Christmas, and then I will have an NFL game that weekend. Hasn't been announced yet, but it will be by next week, and I can tell you about it.
Ross, I know you got to go, but I just wanted to pass this along to you. We do focus groups here every couple of years with listeners and whatnot. Ross Tucker has been brought up very, very positively.
Graded
by a
very
lot of the
high
focus groups.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, focus group.
Yeah, focus group liked you, Ross.
The key is you guys picked the right focus groups, and I'm so glad so many of my family members have moved to Houston recently.
That's great. That is great.
You packed the focus group.
Yeah, said stacked it. We had ringers in there.
Yeah.
Yep. Our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day. Be delicious. Ross, will we talk to you next week on Tuesday? It's Christmas Eve.
I can absolutely talk to you guys next week on Tuesday.
Cool. We'll be in.
I don't know what the I mean, as long as you guys are in and you're up for it, I'm up for it.
We're up for it, man. We'll talk to you on Tuesday next week, man.
This explains why
there's you guys.
All right, thanks, Ross. Merry Christmas.
6'5" Yinzers walking around the building last week. That's
right. Ross's people. So so that's interesting. I think his point on CJ was totally fair, as the follow-up to my my sort of temperature check
this
here.
This is the frustrating part of it, is that, yes, you know, and Greg Cassell made the point that, okay, dealing with the muddy pockets, keeping your eyes downfield, all of that, you know, he can improve in that regard. The problem is it's really, really hard to separate the poor pass protection and a lot of the, and the poor run game from the decisions that CJ's making. And you venture into hazardous territory where you really don't want to make excuses for some of the decision making or sort of some of the lack of timing and rhythm in the offense. You don't want to make excuses for the quarterback too much, but you got to acknowledge and recognize that, man, there have also, because of negative plays, they're in second and long and third and long a lot. Yeah. And CJ can't trust the protection in front of him. So it's just, there's so many different areas you could focus on that just aren't going well. To me, ultimately, and I know I think Clint and I differ in this in some regard. Clint's more positive on Bobby Slowik than I am at this point. I think sometimes people separate play calling and execution too much and put, and they look at the offensive coordinator like, oh, he's the play caller. And if the play's not being executed, oh, that's on the players. No, that's on the offensive coordinator as well. When things aren't being executed crisply, when mental errors are being made, when there's poor communication, when you're having all of these negative plays, when the offensive coordinator or the head coach gets up there and says, well, they got to execute, they execute, they got to execute. To me, I'm saying, like, and I think these guys feel this way. To me, I hear, yeah, that's on the coaching.
Yes.
You are responsible for the execution. I think sometimes people hear that and they think like, oh, they're blaming the players. I hope not. I hope that's not what Bobby Slowik is doing, because ultimately he's responsible for the execution and they're not executing well.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
Even when the play calling is good. Great. Okay, good call. Good play call, Bobby. Yeah. But like, why are the screens being sniffed out immediately by the defense?
Yes.
Because they're not executing poorly. They've got tells. They've got tendencies. And defenses are on to it. And that falls back on the offensive coordinator.
You nailed it. It feels like every team they play has the answers to the test.
The screens are absurd.
They're bad.
It is ridiculous little. So this is an offense that is, you got to execute the deception part of it really well. You want to really dupe people. That's how you get the wide open receivers downfield and whatnot. And there's just no deception. People aren't biting on things.
Nope.
Like linebackers, safeties, everybody's just staying at home. They know when it's going to be a screen. They're not worried about the run. And that's why I'm glad they brought it up in the broadcast last week. The Texans have scored on the opening drive for however many consecutive games. Yeah. It's the best streak in the NFL right now. Yeah. That's great compared to what it used to be when the Texans couldn't score on the opening drive.
Yes.
Back in the Bill O'Brien days.
Yes.
It's almost like, okay, the best version of the Texans offense you're going to see is in that first drive. Mm-hmm. And then it's all downhill after that.
Yeah. That is the biggest explanation for the dynamic that's in place, which is, this is what I thought it would look like last season in CJ's rookie year and Bobby Slowik's first year as a play caller, you know, and to an extent to D'Amico Ryan's first year as a head coach. You got a lot of guys doing their jobs for the first time at an NFL level. And that this season would be the one that looked like last season.
Yeah.
You know, I would have thought they would have been flipped, you know, and that's what's so strange about this. And so everybody seeing the tells and the predictability of what you're doing has got to be the main explanation for that. It's mostly the same guys out there.
Yeah, and from just situational tendencies. But the Texans have their analytics people. That should be – they know what their tendencies are, and then they try to exploit them. It's just that some of the things they do – I give Bobby Slowik credit for the whiteboard element of it, for drawing it up. You know, they've done the – you know, they've done the package where Joe Mixon comes across like in a jet motion, and sometimes he gets the ball and sometimes he doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's worked, but then they'll try to set a play up based on that, and nobody's biting on it.
Right.
It just, the sack, when Ali Gay got that sack in the Tennessee game. So they ran that little jet motion with Joe Mixon. Ali Gay ignored it 100%. So that could be one of two things. One could be Ali Gay knew that it wasn't going to be that Joe Mixon. Or B, Ali Gay as a young player might have been completely oblivious to it. And that's part of the play calling. It's like, no, you've got to know that you've got a defensive end. Like, if that were Danielle Hunter out there, That might have been a better play to run when Danielle Hunter, if Danielle Hunter were the opposing defensive end, because it's a veteran savvy defensive end, and you're hoping, oh, he's gonna bite on this Joe Mixon action, and that'll be enough of a delay for them to get the ball
off. Yeah.
Like, no, it's a young player that's just trying to get his first NFL sack.
Was that the play where Shaq had to come over and pull and block out Ali Gay?
Yes.
There's that too.
Right, yeah, that was the way. It was Shaq coming across, and like Ali Gay was like, whatevs. Yeah. And Shaq didn't really look like he knew what was going on.
No,
either.
He was tippy-toeing.
Yeah.
He was tippy-toeing. Text message, is CJ injured? Seems like a lot of his passes make the receiver have to go to the ground. Why is he throwing so many ground balls hitting guys in stride?
Some of those are because he's trying to throw the safe ball that's not going to be an interception.
Correct.
And some of that comes back on the receivers where, you know, I think like that used to be the special those first few games last year to Robert Woods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'd throw it in the dirt because he felt like Robert Woods could come up with it. And it was either going to be a first down or an incompletion, but it definitely wasn't going to be an interception. I think some of those, they're not dirt balls. They've generally been like at the feet of either Nico Collins or Tank Dell or whomever else, and they're not coming up with them.
Nope.
You know, Nico had an opportunity for one of those last week, and he didn't.
Kind of coming back to the ball near the first down marker. There's third and long, I think. Yeah. No, he.
Yeah, I. You know, the Tennessee game. This is where I would differ with Ross too. I think after the Tennessee game, I saw a few people say, and Ross said this during the broadcast. They're like, well, he's just made too many throws that are, you know, seemed like last year he would have made them, but this year he's making them look difficult. When I went back and watched all of CJ's throws from the end zone, he actually had really good ball placement. But some of the plays like Tank Dell in that Titans game on third and long to Tank Dell over the middle, Tank should have caught that.
Put it on his hands.
Yeah.
Third and 19.
And it was under duress. CJ was getting hit from the side, if I recall
properly.
It was
a rope.
Yeah, and guys aren't coming up with it. But again, I don't want to put it all on the receivers. It's just when there's that many issues in that many different areas, ultimately it comes back on the coaching.
Yeah.
You've got this many guys across the board underperforming, and it's just little miscues here, mistakes there, a mental error there. It all comes back on the offensive coordinator. I'm just not nearly as generous in... Like, oh, he dialed up a good play. No, that's 1/6 of the job.
That's right.
That's the old Bum Phillips quote. It's not what you can, it's not how smart you are. It's what you can get your guys to do.
Yep.
And that's coaching. It's a great, the old saying, what an average plan well executed beats a perfect plan poorly executed every day. Right now, I think the Texans have a lot of great game plans poorly executed, and that's on Bobby.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Someone says Ross Tucker sounds like Carl from Caddyshack. A little bit. Bill Murray's Caddyshack character. A little bit. Ross has that kind of like, you know, that
he's got
offensive lineman's voice thing.
He sounds almost like a little bit drunk, you know, which people like. It's endearing. Like, oh, this is a big drunk guy, but he's not like hovering over me telling me about his plans for a perpetual motion machine or something.
He's got a busy schedule over the next several days. Wow.
Yeah, he said he hasn't been home for Christmas or Thanksgiving.
For a long time.
No, he wasn't asking people to cry him a river or anything. No, it's just the nature
guessing,
of the job.
It's the nature of the job, and I'm guessing, no disrespect to his family, there's part of him that really enjoys that road warrior mentality. I think he's...
You mean getting away from his in-laws?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. It's implied, but I didn't say that. No, just like, I think I was like that before I got into radio. I loved going all over the country and being on the road and traveling, and there's a lot of people that don't like that. I like it a lot.
There's one thing, well, Ross knows this too. It's like sometimes when it comes to players taking personal time off for family events and everything, I'm like very old school in that. A lot of people probably hate it. I'm kind of like, a lot of guys have wives who totally get it and understand that this is a very unique and special opportunity. And especially with players. And there's a lot of financial rewards attached to it.
Yeah.
So look, if U.S. service members can spend entire years away from home and everything, as a multimillionaire, miss a couple of family events or maybe, you know, just the some of the special moments in life because it's a unique situation.
Yes.
With really, really big really big rewards attached to
big
it.
Big time, yeah. And you're not going to do it forever.
Right.
It's not going to be this way. Like a lot of people
are
in regular
jobs. Yeah,
it's not
like my daddy wasn't there for my christening or whatever. Like, no, it's just it's like you've got an entire off season where you get to spend as much time as you want with your kids compared to most people.
Hey, a quick reminder here. We're going to be giving away Texans tickets today. So I know next Tuesday is the Tuesday right before the next Texans home game.
Yeah.
But that's not a lot of time on Christmas Eve to be able to actually get people their tickets. So we're doing the Texans Ticket Tuesday for the Ravens game on Christmas today in the 9 o'clock hour. Front row seats in the bullpen, Christmas Day. I hear there's a concert at halftime, too, for that.
I wonder, I guess there's probably, I wish I knew, like, what the most favorite songs that people want to see are or anything. It's not quite our purview.
No, yeah. Text in.
Don't worry, we're not going to talk about it.
713-572-4610.
No, we won't read any of your texts.
I'm curious. It's text for my own curiosity.
Which Beyonce song do you want to hear?
All of them. Yeah, okay, all gotcha. Of them. 713-572-4610. As long as we're talking about the offense, here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday. How do you think the offense played as a whole on Sunday?
As a whole, I think our offense, we did some good things. We got points. We put the ball in the end zone. We got points. Moved the ball downfield. Put ourselves up to, you know, kick field goals. And, you know, we want to definitely overall, there are always things to improve upon, right? Eliminating the negative plays. Don't like to see the negative plays there for us where we're going backwards. I just want to see more positive plays, gaining positive yardage. But, you know, get the ball in the end zone, play complimentary football. It was enough for us to win.
Some of the talk of the offense since this game from D'Amico and from people in the locker room, from CJ, they know.
Like, right.
They know. The tone better be 180 degrees difference in the building this week about that offensive performance than what they're dishing out in these press conferences.
I was kind of enjoying. Well, I mean, in that press conference, it wasn't like he was positive about it at that point. I heard that as like, oh, he's like, well, we did enough to win the game, and we can't have all these negative. I didn't think that was very like actual praise at all.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't read it that way. I felt like a guy that was trying to. Yeah, he's not gonna like publicly lambaste him or anything.
Yeah,
This ain't it.
And that's kind of what I'm saying. Yeah. He's trying to remain. You know, he's trying to highlight the good things that they did. I'm like, there better be. Dude, they generated 140 yards of offense. I'm taking the fake pun out. They don't get with the quarterback on the field.
Yeah.
They generated 140 yards of offense against a defense that it ain't Pittsburgh's defense.
It's, you go back to
and
the,
you're at home.
You go back to the Lions game. It was you've got a +4 turnover margin. Yeah. How are you only scoring 20 points?
Correct.
That's not acceptable. It's not championship caliber offense.
And that's my point. I'm not saying D'Amico's heaping praise on the offense.
Well, yeah, but again, it down. Like, I don't worry. They know that they've got issues.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't. You get into this point in the season, though, too. Like, what? You can't get up every week and just hammer them down into submission and tell them how crappy they are and everything. You got to try to build on some of the progress you've made.
Right.
But they're very aware that this is not acceptable. I don't think there's anybody in that building that thinks like, oh, we're really like cooking with gas now.
No, I get it. I get it. How would you grade the offensive line in that game on Sunday?
I don't know. Boy, is it a sliding scale or is there a like based on? I mean, a C, I guess.
A C.
They still can't run the ball,
right?
It wasn't like the Dolphins. The Dolphins are a solid defense, but
and I think that is indicative that you're giving them a C. And I thought the same thing, C. Yeah. And then you take a step back and go, they literally can't run the football,
right?
For an offensive line and an offense that we said in the preseason and pointed out multiple times. You pointed out a lot. They don't have a genuinely good run game yet.
Yeah.
You know, like that's Bobby Slowick. I wouldn't hire him as a head coach until he proves he can get a genuinely good run game. They don't have a genuinely good run game. They've got Joe Mixon putting a cape on once every other game, seven times this year. But there rarely has this been a running offense that looks like you could plug somebody else in other than Joe Mixon and move the football.
And honestly, I'm not like this one element, I think. Right now, look, the way the team approached the offseason with the defense and everything else, I think it's been slam dunk. It's looked great. Obviously, the interior offensive line should have been addressed more aggressively. And then I'm looking at Damian Pierce's stats. Damian Pierce had 7 snaps in the game the other day. He hasn't had a carry since the Cowboys game.
Were they on offense or were they on special teams?
No, 7 on offense.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if some of those were on. No, there were 7 on offense.
Seven on offense. Because I know he's a kick returner also. Yeah.
And I, like, he's had 15 carries on the season. And that was the, I, like, that was the one thing. And again, I'm not.
Hold up, stop. Their backup running back has had 15 carries on the season.
And remember, Sean, all training camp long, I'm trying to figure out.
Like 10 of them were in the Patriots game.
I kept saying this can't be their plan. Like, Damian can't be the second string running back. And people were telling me, like, oh, you're an idiot, you're a hater. I'm like, no, I love Damian Pierce, but it's clearly not working out. I could see it in practice.
Right.
I could see it in practice.
Yeah.
And it, the games, there were excuses because they had a disheveled offensive line, because they were treating the offensive line like these guys were all Hall of Famers or something that didn't need to play preseason games. Oh, they don't need the reps. Everything will be fine. Whatever. Yeah. No, if Joe Mixon goes down, it's over.
No, completely over. Dude, you and
100% over.
You and I were sitting next to each other when Mixon went down after that hip drop tackle, and I think we were both terrified.
Yeah. I'm still honestly in shock that they genuinely believe that Damian Pierce was the backup running back. Yeah. I really, the entire time I thought, well, maybe we'll see, and they'll, like, maybe they're trying to trade him or something, but, like, they seem like they were genuinely devoted to him, and yet again for a second straight year, I guess they just didn't realize what was plainly in front of them, that no, this is not. This system or whatever is not working out for Damian Pierce.
Text message. Pierce is in the doghouse, or they simply don't believe in him.
Doghouse my ass.
No, he's the opposite.
I love that doghouse.
He's the opposite.
Can somebody give me a doghouse where I make $500,000 a year to not do much?
That he's on the team would indicate he's not in the doghouse. Yeah.
He's got... Now, he does average 6.7 yards per attempt because of that one long run in the Patriots game. Yeah,
that's true. 15. I hadn't seen that.
You texted
me his game log the other day, and I just looked and saw how minuscule the numbers were on there, and that's very frustrating. I like your backup running back has 15 carries, and he's been on the team all year.
And
long.
Again, like, I'm not like overall lambasting Kasari over that or anything. I mean, look, his work with the defensive backs and the guys he's brought on this team, he's done a very good job. So not every GM makes every move the right move, obvious. And but the interior offensive line being the shambles that it is, and the fact that Joe Mixon is the only running back on the team that you feel good about, that's scary going into.
That's problematic. I mean, if you're like, there's a few positions on this team where they're one hit away from having to really shuffle here and cobble things together.
Yeah, and then the part of it too is, like, it's not so easy to just go out and get a running back either.
Yes.
I know it's easy. I say they're a dime a dozen, but they're not, obviously.
Yeah. Well, and this is one of those things where you go, okay, they're probably ahead of schedule on the rebuild. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're probably ahead of, like, we had these Super Bowl expectations at the beginning of the year. The fact of the matter is, once Nick was able to clean up the Bill O'Brien mess, that took a year or two. And then you get DeMeco in here, and they're probably ahead of where people expected them to be when DeMeco Ryans got here.
If you're you look at the Lions, because they're a couple years ahead in terms of when the head coach was hired.
Yeah.
And all right, Montgomery's out, but at least you got Jahmyr Gibbs. The Texans aren't at that point yet.
That's a great point. Yeah. Montgomery, if you haven't heard, David Montgomery, the Lions running back, is out for the year. Right. Now they're going to lean on Jahmyr Gibbs a lot more.
Yeah.
You know? 713-572-4610. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. One move that they did get right, that Nick did get right, was drafting Derek Stingley Jr. with the third pick. Can we put the sauce versus Sting debate to bed? And I've got audio from the postgame show with Derek Stingley. Maybe the most underrated thing that's impressive about Derek Stingley Jr. You're going to hear it coming up.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Derek Stingley, beast. He was great. We'll probably be finding out in the next 24 hours or so, if I had to predict, that he will be the defensive player of the week. Boy, that pick, that second pick, which we're about to hear here in a minute, has gotten a ton of attention this week on all the big shows.
Oh, it was right. I mean, because it was on Tyreek Hill especially.
Yes.
And he was just yanking the ball away from Tyreek Hill.
It got a lot of attention, man. Got a lot of attention. So that's good. That's good for you. If you're Derek Stingley and you're trying to get those accolades, like your first Pro Bowl or first team all pro, which I think he's in the mix for right now.
I'll say too, Tua kind of threw a big compliment to Kamari Lassiter and his press availability after the game, just talking about, okay, the poison pill of when the Texans are in single high coverage, okay, do you attack Derek Stingley or do you attack Kamari Lassiter? And you got a pain in the butt there. And those two guys, they are both in the top three for completion percentage when targeted in the NFL. Like they're as a cornerback duo that is emerging as one of the best in the NFL.
Good as it gets.
Yeah.
Good as it gets. Cornerback duos and defensive end duos. The Texans, that has been, look, if they're going to make a run, that's what's going to fuel them. It's gonna come from that side of the football. It ain't coming from the offense right now.
They've got a left guard trio on the season now.
They do.
So three different guys play left guard. Well, four if you include Kendrick Green.
Yeah. For a few plays. Here's D'Amico.
He hasn't even been discussed in the last.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on to Derek.
Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday asked how impressive was Derek Stingley on Sunday.
Yeah, it's very impressive. Like I said, it's a play it's very rare you see a player make a play that way to end the game. Like that was that's all pro type plays. Like that's what it looks like, you know, when you're one of the top guys of your position in the league going up, matching it up against, you know, one of the best wideouts in the league as well, and to make the plays that he made, you know, can't say enough about how impactful Stingley has been, you know, throughout not only those plays on yesterday, but Stingley has been impactful throughout the entire year. I think from the past three wins, he's been our defensive player of the game. So when he's making impact plays, it's putting us in position to win football games.
I think the biggest thing about that game was, remember early on when in the first, it might have been the first or second series for the Dolphins, Stingley tried to undercut that route to Tyreek Hill. And you're wondering, like, oh boy, they might be setting him up for some double moves here at some point. I think the thing about Stingley, and including on that game-sealing interception, he's very smart in terms of knowing the game plan of the offense and knowing tendencies, I think. And I think he takes calculated risks. And you hesitate to say that because sometimes a guy can just get lucky a few times and you think they're calculated risks. He's very much in that zone now where there's times where it might look like he's beat, but he's actually just baiting a little bit. He knows when he's got help over the top. And I thought he did a masterful job of that against Tyreek Hill.
He was really interesting. He was on the postgame show with me and Clint. And I find this stuff interesting as somebody who didn't play. Anytime you're hearing guys describe what was going on in their mind out there when they made a play, here's a play-by-play. This is Mark Vandermeer's call on the first interception, which took place on a third down in the Texans' red zone with the Dolphins driving for the tying touchdown in the fourth quarter.
Tua in the gun. Here's the snap. Tua, quick fire, right side, and intercepted by Stingley. He's got it across the 15 and wrestled out of bounds by Hill. Derek Stingley Jr., the INT. He turns back Miami.
All right, so here was Stingley on the postgame show. We asked him to take us through the interceptions, that kind of thing. And Stingley doesn't talk much, so I was not expecting, I just studied some film and jumped the route, and that was it. I thought this was pretty cool, him kind of taking us through the whole mindset of the play.
I ended up on Tyreek in the slot, and I knew if he gave me an outside release, I was thinking it was going to be like a deep out or corner, like some, not a go ball, just for the simple fact that most people, when they guard him, they think, okay, he's fast, probably running a deep route. So, like, it, just mind games going along. But I wasn't really thinking deep right there, so as soon as he broke, I kind of broke and then picked it.
Picked it?
So he basically called other cornerbacks idiots. Scared.
Yes.
He called them scurred.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they're scurred of the deep ball. And that is...
It helps when you got skills like Stingley.
No, but it, you know, when you look at... like, and that's the difference between Diggs in Dallas as a young player. Boy, he was really opportunistic, but also, man, he was also making... he was so aggressive that he was making a lot of mistakes and allowing big stuff over the top. Like, that's the whole part of cornerbacks that really elevates guys up into that next level, is when they know what a guy's threats are, but they know the game plan and what they like to do in different situations and everything. And that the mental side of the game for really good cornerbacks is, I think, really underappreciated. And Stingley's just, he strikes me as kind of like Kobe in terms of just being a nerd for his sport. Like, just kind of... I think he's immersed in it and obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And I think you're starting to really see the dividends of that, because it just, he keeps logging reps, and he's starting to get a feel for the way the game is played.
Yep. Here was the second interception, and we'll play the audio, the highlight here, and then I'll let you know what impressed me about Stingley's answer on this one.
Tua takes the snap. Tua with pressure, throwing downfield to his right, and intercepted. Stingley again. That's going to do it. The Texans are going to beat Miami. Stingley's second pick seals the deal.
Great call.
And Houston will get its ninth win.
Great call by Vandy on that one. Here was Stingley taking us through the interception that everybody's been watching for the last 2 days around the league that sealed the deal against the Miami Dolphins.
The second one, I think I was in a slot again, but that's situational. You know, they got to get down the field. That time I was thinking deep shot. So as soon as he passed the little threshold of when you could break down on the route and the turn, look for the ball.
There it was.
Yeah.
There it was. Yeah. So he, that what impressed me about that is like, okay, it's the last 2 minutes. They're not dinking and dunking down the field.
Yeah.
You know, like Tyree, this is going to be something that's deep. And as soon as I get past whatever the amount of yardage
landmark,
is,
yeah,
you flip your hips and you're turning around.
That's the other, like, if your defensive back's coming into the league, the landmarks are a little bit different. Routes are run at like different standard depths and everything.
Yeah.
And they get super comfortable with that, but then they know how teams can tweak it and how your receiver might handle it. And it's just all that. It's all that stuff above the X's and O's that he's really become a true veteran safety. All right, cornerback / slot corner.
In those plays,
playing over the last 5 weeks. He's traveled with the best receiver. He's played on both sides of the ball. I think that the defensive side of the ball right now feels like the way the Texans operate, that's the most Astros-like part of their team, in that you've got guys who they come into the system – and then you can just almost chart their progress.
Yeah.
They get better and better and better and better. Henry Toa is playing like a completely different human being this year compared to what he showed last year. And I was trying to be cautiously optimistic about Henry Toa, but I was just worried that he looked so uncomfortable last year, and he didn't even look as fast as he did at Alabama. And I think probably some of that was just because of mental hesitation. I know he was a little bit heavier too, but he looks like a completely different guy. Christian Harris last year turned into a completely different player midway through the system. You look at all the different linebackers that had shuffled through. You look at the way the defensive backs are playing. You look at the way some of these defensive tackles come in and then go off and get a better contract elsewhere. You know, John Singleton goes out, or John Singleton, Sheldon Rankins. I've been calling Sheldon Rankins.
You had the Astros on your mind. John You're Singleton. Thinking about the Astros?
No, I'm thinking about the filmmaker. Yeah. So, as a show of respect. So, that feels like the Astros. Like, oh, guys come here, and then they get better. And then they leave, but you can find somebody else to replace. That feels awesome.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes down to coaching. That's why I've got no interest in giving Bobby Slowick a break, because frankly, whenever I look at a team where I think, okay, could a really good coach improve that? And I say yes, then okay, then this guy that's here is expendable. And on the offensive side of the ball, I see a lot of expendable features.
Yeah, and you should be able to get your pick of the litter of guys that you think highly of to be an OC here, given who the quarterback is. You're not, whoever it is not being asked to come in and repair a broken quarterback.
What if Kevin Stefanski just says, I want out? He doesn't get fired. He forces a trade.
Yeah, that's interesting. That'd be great.
He starts dishing stories to Mary Kay Cabot about, how weird the owners are or something.
I'd say take the Lombardi trophies they have in their cases in Cleveland, tie them to the bumper and drive around the lot with them. But they don't have any trophies in Cleveland at all. None.
Yeah.
None. I mean, they may have some from before the Super Bowl back in the day. But that doesn't count to me.
It's hard for us to sit here and, throw stones at house, but still.
But I will in this case.
Well, there's no legacy of greatness or anything that's going to tie him there.
Yeah.
You know, I know that it's not.
Bring him in.
It's not like Lincoln Riley's statue that he should have stayed and waited to receive.
No kidding. All right. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. Hey, a reminder, 9 o'clock hour, giving away Texans tickets. Ravens Texans on Christmas Day. It is a Texans Ticket Tuesday here on Sports Radio 610. Seth, are you ready to get petty?
I've been petty.
Pettycast?
Been petty since 4 a.m. today.
Seth is going to get petty. I'm going to get petty. We'll play random bits of pettiness from around the world of sports. It is the Tuesday Pettycast, and it is coming up next.